Well, as our missionary brother Mark Blackwell makes his way to the platform, let me just give a word of introduction. Many a time I sat where you are sitting and I saw someone bring a note up to the speaker and I wondered what in the world is in that note. And you're always wondering too. And actually, I wouldn't even tell you except I don't want you to die of curiosity. But someone thoughtfully looked at the sheet out there and they reminded me that there is an opening for supper for the Blackwells tonight, except I overheard Mark say this morning that he'd rather not eat supper tonight after the service. So, unless somebody wants to take him and can prevail upon him to go, there is no need for supper tonight. But the Blackwells will be in our missionary house for the next several weeks on into January, and it'll give them an opportunity to circulate and go other places, but primarily they're going to be here. We'll probably be seeing some more of them throughout that time, and their daughter Michelle and her husband and some grandchildren will be coming to join them for part of that time. Well, there are many things that I could tell you about the life and ministry of our brother, Mark Blackwell. Let me say that he is a teacher, a mentor, a discipler, a trainer of men. He is the one who trained Stuart Waugh for gospel ministry, but many others as well. But Stuart came to know Christ as Savior through the witness of a Pentecostal missionary from America who went to Rhodesia in those days and proclaimed the gospel, and the Lord used it, and he came to know Christ. But we're glad that the Lord steered him in sounder directions theologically, and he came under the care of Mark Blackwell, and he trained him for ministry, and Stuart has been carrying on a wonderful ministry all of these years. And Mark has trained many others as well, and has organized formal training programs of which other people are involved in teaching too. And he's reached the stage of life, you do need to know, he's reached that stage of life in which he is older than I am. We won't say how much, but when we were in school together, we weren't in the same grade. I want you to know that.
It's getting personal, brother. Go ahead, finish whatever you're going to say. Yeah.
In which many of his former pupils are scattered around the world preaching the gospel in other countries. And he has the joy not only of ministering in South Africa, but he travels to Ireland and Australia and other places and preaches for men that he's trained in ministry there. So the Lord has used this brother in a wonderful way. Good to have you, Mark. Let's see, that wasn't so bad, was it?
I love you, buddy. Simple as that. I love you. It's nice to be here. It's a privilege for us to be able to say thank you to this church. And that's why we've come tonight, to say thank you. Thank you for your faithful support financially. And then to thank you for your prayers. And then thank you also for your stand for the gospel and for the Word of God and for missions in general and so many other things. We have churches that we aren't always so proud to be associated with that we run into. And then other times we have churches that we're extremely proud to be a part of. And we're very proud to name this as a church that encourages us and strengthens us just because you're being who you are. And you're staying true to the God that you love. And we thank you for it. I would also like to start with a little bit different sort of a start with, I'd like to not really embarrass him, it won't embarrass you, but Bob, I want to tell a story about you that they don't know. Brother Latour writes an article, what is it, every Sunday. And I wrote him one day and asked him if I could plagiarize his material. And sort of like that. And he said, no, I could do anything I wanted with it. Oh, you know, that's a dangerous thing. I can tell you Greg would never say anything like that. And So it's gone in many different ways. It's become, in some cases, a tract or pamphlet on one occasion. Another occasion, on a bi-weekly basis, I reduce it down to 1,000 words. That's all I'm allowed to put in the newspaper. But I have an article that runs in English, and I reduce yours down. So I do a editing job on you. And then we translate it into Afrikaans. And one man that I know of has translated it into Khoza as well and made it into a tract. But on a bi-weekly basis, I select from yours the ones I think that people would understand, and then reduce it and translate it or whatever we're going to do. I wanted you to know that about, I don't get a lot of response from these newspapers. You just don't. People see me in the street, recognize me, will thank me for the article. But other than that, I don't get too much in the way of emails or that type of thing on it. But one of the men in my one church that we started and have handed over now to another man, this man is a retired school teacher, principal of a school as well in his later years. He's now retired and active in our church. And he came to me and he said in his retirement he was working for a man 2 days a week in town. He told me the man's name. And he said, he's asked me to tell you thank you. And I said, thank you for what? He said, well, Mark, you write this article every 2 weeks. And this man was discouraged about problems in his home, problems in his business. And as is often the case in South Africa, he was considering suicide. And he had already gotten his gun and loaded it and had come into town to do something. And one of his friends who he sees at that particular place, I think it was a news place, gave him the paper and said, he said, I don't really have need for it. He said, you always take it, take it. So he took it and your article and mine was in there on hope. He read it and prayed and asked the Lord to forgive him. And told his friend, tell that Brother Blackwell that he might have just saved my life. So I haven't had a time to talk with him yet. I will. And I'll let you know how it turns out. But I think it's an exciting teamwork we have going that we probably don't make much of. And I thank you for it. Yeah. We also want to take the time that I think is important for you to understand us. And many of you do know about our work, and we've shown some of these pictures before, and so there's nothing new about all of this. We probably should bring that down. But I think it's important for you just to get an overview of what the Lord's done. And we work in a number of languages. We work in English and Afrikaans. And but we also work with people who are coming out of Zimbabwe, Malawi, Zambia, Nigeria, coming in to refugee-type ministries as well. Some people have asked me, how do I do all the things that I do? Well, I actually don't do them. I train men and I work through men and women who do most of these ministries. There's no way possible I could be involved in all the things that we're involved in. Now, behind me is a picture of our family, and part of what we do through the family. They're all in the ministry, and I'll introduce them more personally at the end of the slide presentation. But just to say that we're very thankful for our family's involvement and support and encouragement. And to have your whole family working on the field in ministry is a rare privilege. And we didn't plan it. We didn't know it was going to happen this way. It's just the way the Lord has worked things out over the years. But we're thankful for that. We also wanted you to understand that not only are we working in different languages, but we work with between 10 and 20 missionaries from the United States who over these last 40 years have been in our circle of co-workers and So when you see things happening, one of the things you need to understand is I never do anything alone. I do everything in teams. Sometimes teams of two, sometimes teams of five or six. So everything we do is teamwork. Nothing is ever done any other way. We don't want to do it any other way. It's also important, I think, that you understand that we have six South African church planters now who are supported totally by South African funds, and they're busy out planting churches right now. Okay? I had some good news this last week. We had some businessmen come out from Philadelphia, Christian businessmen. I showed them eight properties that we wanted to buy for new church plants. And I got news a week ago that they're going to help us. Well, they're going to pay for six of those properties, five or six. Five right now and one when, as soon as one comes available. We had it available, but we lost it. And so now we're looking again. And so to give you some idea of what's going on right now, the slides will give you a bit of history, but they won't tell you what's happening at the moment. At the same time, we've graduated quite a few students, and we have 32 churches that are involved in the whole area around us now. And these 32 churches are some started by National South Africans, our ex-students. Some are by missionaries. We've been involved in some as well, of course. And so you get a picture of that. We have a camp as well, and we have a Christian school. The Christian school runs about 80 underprivileged children. They do pay something, but they pay according to what they can afford, and that is supplemented by our churches in South Africa. The camp is 15 years old. We've now had over 350 children accept Christ as their Savior that we've been able to follow up and assure ourselves they really were saved and that have been baptized and are in our churches. So not just 350, but 350 that we've followed through on. And so the Lord's really blessing in that work. And that's exciting in 15 years to see that kind of thing happen, and it just makes your heart rejoice. We have buildings. We have about six to eight buildings. Some of them are connected that have been built over these 15 years, and we never owe a penny. None of our 32 churches have any debt at all. Everything is debt-free in South Africa, or in Cape Town. I just give you this kind of report because sometimes it's hard to see what's going on right now. Our church ministries institutes, we've had seven of our graduates who are pastoring in the Natal Durban area. We have four of the men who are pastoring in Johannesburg today. We have eight pastoring in the Cape right now, and three missionaries and their wives active right now. We have 16 current students that are full-time students. So it gives you some idea. Over these years, the average is we'll graduate two or three a year total. They don't all go into the ministry, but a bulk of them have. And so we thank the Lord for that. So that just gives you maybe some picture. I think sometimes we get lost in the PowerPoint presentation and you can't see what's going on right now, what's keeping us busy. And I like to stay busy because it keeps me out of a little bit of trouble, but I also like to get into a lot of trouble. And so we're active as best we can. I've been asked when I'm going to retire, and I'm just waiting for the rapture. So let's stop and think about the scriptures. And we've done this before, and I'll keep doing this with you if I come again another time, to try to help you understand that what we do as missionaries is based on a biblical premise, a biblical concept. They, having fasted and prayed, laid hands on them and sent them away. We were sent out by our home church, which at that time was in California, where my relatives and family are from. And we went out as a missionary under independent faith mission to Zimbabwe, which was then called Rhodesia. That's what we looked like back then. Things have changed. the church up there. The picture of it, Stuart Waugh and his wife are in there somewhere. So is Stuart's mom and dad. His mom and dad had accepted the Lord not too much earlier than that picture. His dad had accepted the Lord about 6 months earlier, and his mom would have been just having accepted Christ at that time, right about then. The Bible institutes that we have are all there to train men for ministry. We don't just teach the Bible. We're literally a training institute. And so if they come to our Bible Institute, they're being trained to be pastors, evangelists, church planters, missionaries, whatever. Right now, I've just come in from Ireland, where one of our graduates, who is a Afro-Malaysian in his background, he also has some Hottentot in his background, he is a church planter in Ireland, planting successfully a church in the south of Ireland. And there's him and all these red-headed Irish people. And it's quite an experience to be there. And this is my fourth trip to be with them. And I must say, I'm excited to see that we're sending missionaries from South Africa to other countries as well. So it's pretty exciting. And his support comes from South Africa, but also from England and also from Ireland. So his situation is a little bit different. You'll remember that when we went over there, there was a war going on. My uncle was in the CIA. I asked him how long I had. He said 5 years is going to be the best. Well, in 4 years, the country fell. So it was an interesting time period in our lives. We were always safe. We never had to feel that our lives were threatened. We had bullets whiz by us and things like that once in a while, but not too much. So it was pretty safe. Our kids, I thought you'd like to see them. You may not. Maybe I'd just like to see them. I don't know. But David Livingston is, of course, famous for that territory. And we took our family to see them. And these are our boys who are now pastors, and our daughter over there in the stroller who's now married to a church planter. So it's pretty exciting. City of Salisbury, as it was then called, now Harare, and the map of Zimbabwe as it is today gives you some idea of where ministries are active from our past anyway. There's been much more go on through Stuart and others since that time. But we still stay in contact with our old churches, our old pastors. And I have one fellow right now, and he's an evangelist. And right before I left, he said he needed a car. And he wanted to know if I could help him raise support for a car. And I said, well, I can't promise. And he said, well, if you do and they give you one over there, how will you get it back? So he was really wanting a car, but he was thinking one of these over here. So I don't know. I haven't answered that question to him, how I'd get it back. I didn't really think of getting a car here. But anyway, he's a sweet brother, but he doesn't understand how far away I am, I don't think. And then we moved down to Durban. We went with ABWE at that time, primarily moving to ABWE for one single reason, so that we could recruit more broadly. And I wanted to recruit a large number of missionaries, and we have done that. And so we brought missionaries into Durban, Johannesburg, and Cape Town, and they're still coming in from these years, where the men we recruited are recruiting more. And so it's expanding. There are well over 125 churches now in South Africa that are Bible-believing, preaching the truth, and it's quite exciting to see that. There are certainly more than that that are not linked to our ministries, but I'm just reporting on ours. And so then we, in the Durban area, our kids got a little bit older, added one dog to the scene, and we ministered there. And the Church Ministries Institute advanced. Churches were planted in really four different places. The fourth one there is literally Stuart Waugh's ministry. And he came down from Rhodesia at that time, and we worked together. And he planted his while I planted the Westville. And we ran our youth groups together, and we had Sunday night together sometimes, because we had such small groups that You got real insecure when it was you and your wife and kids and one other guy. So by putting ourselves together, we usually, for a while, had a few more people. Then eventually we divided the works properly, and that's the way it went. In Acts 14:23, it says, "So when they had appointed elders in every church and prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed." It's an exciting thing for me to stop and realize that as we've gone on over the years, one of the things I've had to do is say goodbye. And to hand churches over is, it is painful, if you want to know the truth. You love the people. They've never found it painful for me to give, to leave, though. They always find that a rejoicing moment. I don't know why. But they do miss my wife, I guess. But it is a heart-wrenching moment in your life, and when you do it again, and you do it again, but you do just that. You bring men together, and you pray, and you commend them to the Lord, in whom they believed, and you go on, and you have to trust the Lord. And that may sound funny to say that, but when you're involved in something, you trust the Lord, but the Lord tells you what's happening, and you, the Lord helps you understand what's happening. Now you're gone, and you have to just pray, and you don't maybe hear anything for a few months, and you are out of the loop, as they say, and you trust the Lord. That's what you're to do. Well, we believe that's important, but to have strategic missions, we have to understand that the basic core of ministry is reasoning with people from the Scriptures, explaining and demonstrating that the Christ had to suffer. That phrase, demonstrating, a lot of times in the Scriptures it talks about manifesting the truth, making the truth obvious through your own living illustration, making the truth simple through your own living illustration. There are a lot of things people don't understand until they see it lived out in your own life. And they hear about these things, but they need to have that contact with you and with others that are ministering in their lives. And so it's a wonderful privilege to preach. I don't know. I think I have enjoyed the strategic side of planting churches, handing them over, bringing students in, starting churches through students. But still the most exciting thing is the one-on-one opportunity, for me at least, and for my wife, to just be involved in lives and see people have the light come on in their life. They now understand something. They now understand how this works. They understand what faith is. They understand what obedience is. You know, it's just the joy. That is the joy. We went to Cape Town, finally. We'd always planned to go there. We'd had a long strategic plan. Some of it we've carried out, some of it we have not, but we ended up going to Cape Town. And as we look at the Cape Town area, I have a list that you can't follow, and it's not important that we follow, but this just shows you where the churches have been started. All the arrows are converging on that. These men on the right-hand side are some of the primary pastors that have been trained in our Bible Institute who are pastoring in the city itself. And others, of course, are now going further afield, even to Ireland. And so we have those. We have others in New Zealand, others in Australia. And so it's exciting to see some of these men right now. I could ask you to pray for a family in Australia who are struggling terribly with running into false doctrine and having to face false doctrine there in the church that they were involved in Australia. And how to handle it. So you can pray for them. And so we stay in touch with our folks. In fact, even the deacons and others, when they move off or their companies move them away to other countries, we track them down, check them out, make sure they're in good churches. We don't let them we don't forget them. We follow them up. And the young people, we know where they all are. When they get married, we know where they go, and we track them down, and here comes Mark and Judy. And they think, oh, you know, I wonder sometimes, maybe I'm overdoing it, but they reassure us that they're not. So we go to Dubai. We have to go to Switzerland pretty soon. We're going to go anywhere they go, we go, wherever their businesses take them. And then we make sure they're in good churches and that they're growing in the Lord and that we're happy with what's going on. Otherwise, they get a lot of sermons from me. And so then our ministries look about like this. That's sort of some common scenes in our daily life. This fellow baptizing here on the left is, at that time, he was a trainee pastor. He is now the pastor of that church right next to him. And we've moved on. So that church is behind us as well. And so the Lord's blessed, and it's exciting. He and his wife, Chris and Marissa, are really faithful. They do have struggles. Part of his struggles will just be a Dutchman. A born-again Dutchman is still a Dutchman. And you talk about stubborn. Now, if you're Dutch, may the Lord forgive you. I mean, forgive me. But let me tell you, they can really be stubborn. But when they decide something, and decide to do something right, they can be stubborn about that too. And so they really make good Bible-believing preachers and pastor's wife, and they're doing a good job. We're very thankful for them. Swartland Baptista Comienta is, along with the Lingaletto Outreach, our ministries that we have, that we've also passed over, handed them over now. We're not involved in them as of 2 years ago. But it's an exciting work to us, and we thank the Lord for these people and for the privilege that we have ministering in their lives. But it's just to give you a feel for what this church is about. 35 or 40 miles north of Cape Town, to give you some idea. This is another interesting one. You can see my son Michael is the tall fellow baptizing there. This is at his church, Parle Valley. This was started through a group of us who started the work. One of the men was a deacon from Friendship Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina, who came out to work at our camp. And he would go into town to Parle to go grocery shopping, and they keep beating people to witness to. And he says, what do I do? Don't we need to start a church there? And I said, no, I don't need to start a church there, but you do. And he said, but, well, I'm a deacon. I said, well, the first evangelists were deacons, so go for it. And so then I sat down with him and his wife, and I taught them how to plan a church. And they took notes. We met two or three times. And then every few days he'd report on how they were doing. And that church is going just fine now. He's retired, come back to Raleigh. But the church goes on. The Lord's blessing it. And it's quite exciting to see what the Lord has done. But I always remember him telling me that I needed to start a church there. And I'm telling him, you need to start a church there. And he's looking at me like, I came to help at the camp. I didn't come to do this. But the Lord knows. And then we have other new church plans out in Lingaletto as one. There's also over on the other side near Somerset West ministries that are being started and expanding. Usually from our churches, then they branch another church and they branch another church. So not so much missionaries from America doing it now. We're more involved in assisting than we are leading. So there's one or two missionaries, I'd say, in a leading role in the Cape. Everyone else is now following the lead of South African pastors and such. The Paardeberg Mountain Retreat is the camp I was telling you about. It's been very exciting to minister at this camp. That building is finished now. I tried to get a picture. I tried to download it at Barnes & Noble today, but I didn't get it to work. But that building's finished on the left. And so it's quite exciting. The facilities are coming along. They're all finished now. And we thank the Lord for that. We can now handle about 200 to 250 comfortably at a time at the camp. And that may not sound like a lot on American scale, but it is exciting for us. Further scenes from the camp and the children and the camp director is Malcolm McRobert. He's also one of the graduates of our Bible Institute. He is ordained as a pastor. Every once in a while he starts talking about starting a church at the camp for all the farm people around it. There's so many farm people around. I mean, we're in a heavy farm area. But he hasn't done it yet, and I don't know if he will, but maybe he will. And he's certainly qualified and capable, and pray for him, Malcolm McRobert. He's a good brother, and his wife, Suzanne, and Liam and Kieran. And then to the scriptures again. So now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified. Here again, the last few years have been handing works over. So you might wonder if we're even doing anything anymore, if we've handed everything over. Well, we're not planting any new churches ourselves, all right? We need the young men to do that. We need to reach the young families. And so if I go, I could build a church of retirees, but I can't build a church with young people. And so we've got the young men doing that. And so they let us come and preach, and I'm preaching every Sunday, usually preaching every Sunday morning and Sunday night, and or teaching one or two classes on a Sunday night. So it keeps me busy. That's our Church Ministries Institute classes. This is one of the classes here. That's what a class looks like. It's a group. Well, in that picture, there was about five, but if you could see behind them, there was another 8 or 10 sitting around, and that's the type of work we do. We're still involved in counseling, marriage counseling, discipleship. I have a couple of young men that I'm discipling. It's very exciting. I have one guy I chase around the world. He's on ships. And so I chase him with Skype. Sometimes I catch him, sometimes I don't. I give him literature to read, and he asks questions, and that's about what we do. We have the Training Institute we've mentioned, the mentoring leadership, and then just consulting. A lot of the pastors want to bring ideas by me and see if I think they're okay. They have the ideas. They just want someone to talk about. So we'll meet and have coffee, sometimes cake. Yeah, and that's why I can't eat tonight. I've gained 3 pounds since I've been in America, which I do blame personally on all of y'all. And so that's what we're doing. Judy's still involved in music, playing the piano, singing some, not so much singing anymore, but sing some, discipleship, children's ministries. We're still staying active in all of that, and keeps us young to hang around all these young people. And this is my oldest son, Mark, and his wife, Nancy. And now this picture is really out of date. She'd kill me if she, my granddaughter's just turned 20, so she'd die if she saw that picture. But she's just as cute there, 20 years old. And Matthew, he's got a better haircut now. So anyway, they've changed. Then our son, Michael, and his wife, Heidi, and Eric and Natalie and Tyler are all involved in the ministry there. That's about 40 miles northeast of us, the opposite of where Mark is. Then we have our daughter, Michelle, who's going to be here. I don't know what Sundays they'll arrive here. Maybe in 2 weeks they'll be here with us. So we're real excited about seeing them. They're coming over to America. They've been raising support with BMW out of Atlanta as their mission agency. And this agency was the one agency was willing to let them raise support in two countries. So they have half of their support from South African churches, and they have about a fourth of their support from the United States, and they're trying to get that up to the last bit on these next 5 months. You can be praying for them. And so it's quite exciting. That picture is also a bit old, but when you see them, you'll see Julia is now 2 years old, Jesse's 3, and Ruan's 7 now. He's 7 years old. My goodness, he's getting old. And so I want to talk to you. I've got, Pastor said, my rapture takes place in 10 minutes. I want to talk to you just about some things from the scripture that I think are important for you to understand if you want to understand a missionary heart. A missionary heart, as I understand it, is found in some very simple scriptures in 1 Corinthians, if you want to go there with me, chapter 16. we see Paul closing off his letter. Paul was a team worker, and I've learned to be a team worker from Paul. And he makes this comment in verse 15, "I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have devoted themselves," or some versions would say addicted themselves, "to the ministry of the saints." I believe that one of the things that people miss on missionary work is we're not just out there being evangelists. What we're really doing is we're out there supporting a Christian movement among pastors, evangelists, missionaries, new Christians, deacons, leaders, Sunday school teachers. And we form a ministry, a fellowship, and our friends and their friends and their neighbors see this love and this concern for one another demonstrated. And they have never seen anything like that in their life. They've never seen people who love each other like Christians can do it. And they can talk about how they have doctrines and certain churches have experiences and other churches have exciting programs. Our churches have love. And we teach them to love. To love one another, to care for one another. And listen, South Africans by nature are very family-oriented. And they hold together with their families, and they're very unfriendly toward everybody else. And so we've had to teach them that your family is now the family of God, and you've got to love everybody else. And that takes quite a bit of thought and time and preaching and discipling to move a person away from just believing his own family is his security blanket and seeing that now he's a Christian, he has a new family and he needs to be a part of that family. And instead of rejecting everybody that is not in your family, he must now learn to love everybody outside of that Christian family group. And so it's just a total dynamic change of everything they think, because they're moving from our family, my family, to the family of God, which I'm a part of. And they're moving away from distrusting and fearing everybody else to wanting to witness to everybody else and to share with and do for and care for them in every way they can. And it is quite a change. But it's people like Stephanas that I know Paul depended on to do this work. The preaching of the word is essential, but the living of that word is equally essential. And then if we go a little bit further, just go back, if you don't mind, to Romans chapter 16. And we see in verse 1 and 2, "I commend unto you Phoebe, our sister, who is a servant of the church, which is at Centuria, that ye receive her in the Lord as become a saint, and that ye assist her in whatever business she hath need of you, for she has been a helper." It's an interesting thing to think about one who serves and succors the brethren, the saints, just takes care of them, looks after them. It's quite an exciting thing. And Paul says, not only of them, but of us too, myself too. Paul takes a moment to say thank you for all that she's done for him as well. You mustn't think that we aren't cared for on the field. Missionaries who build these sort of relationships of love also receive a lot of love. And you just have no idea how much love we receive. Sometimes it's ridiculous. And sometimes it's embarrassing. But I can tell you this, it's also what God wants us to have. And so many times people say to you, grow weary in the ministry. I never have. I never have. Why? Is it my personality? No. Is it my inability to be moody? Oh, no. I can be moody. But when you set those things aside and you die to those things and you let people love you, they'll motivate you right back out there again day after day And that's the experience we have as many Phoebes. And then in 1 Corinthians 16, if you don't mind going back there one more time, verse 18 was, for me at least, representative of what I was trying to say to you tonight. And that is that it's not just one. I've already mentioned to you tonight that we don't do anything alone. We do everything. Dr. Ironside used to talk about the great gospel band, he called them, the band of men who would walk down the Roman roads with Paul and Peter and James and John, and these band of men and sometimes women who would go from city to city taking the gospel. And I remember as a young boy reading about that thing, those things from Dr. Ironside when he'd talk about the gospel band. And I wondered what it would be like, but I'm reporting to you right now, I'm speaking to you and telling you I'm a part of a gospel band. And I'm not the orchestra leader, I'm not the choir leader. I have been the choir leader sometimes, but not anymore. There are other men now who are the leaders. And as Barnabas learned, there's a time that Barnabas' name comes up first, and then Paul, and then it switches. And then it's Paul's name first and Barnabas second. And then finally you don't hear about Barnabas for a while. He was still busy, but you just don't hear about him. And that's a natural flow of events many times in life. In verse 18 we read, "For they have refreshed my spirit and yours. Therefore acknowledge them as such." If you go back and just look through all of these passages, which I have not taken time to read, in verse 17, Paul says, "I'm glad of the coming of Stephanas and Fortunatus and Achaicus, for that which was lacking on your part, they've supplied." You have no idea. I'm sure you can't know what I'm talking about. I remember my South African students telling me, "We can't model the kind of churches you're telling us about. We can't imagine them. We've never seen them." So it's hard for us to, you picture something. I can picture Beacon Baptist in my mind. They can't do that. You must be having the same problem when I'm telling you about all of these people banding together, serving together, showing love together. You know, we don't have any arguments in Cape Town between the churches. All of our churches get along fine. We've never had one pastor leave for immorality. We've never had anybody bite the dust along the way because we're busy in each other's lives, caring for each other, loving each other. It's exciting. It's big fun. And if people say, you know, you want to retire from that, you've got to be kidding. You know, speaking selfishly, why would I want to do that? Why would I want to give up all this love? Why would I want to give up all this opportunity? Why would I want to not see more people saved? I mean, come on, you know? So, you know, I had a church, even one of my supporting churches, write me and ask me if I'd like to come and be the pastor of their church. I was so offended, and I told them so. You know, what did they think? It's a terrible thought. A missionary heart is one that's equipped to bear others' needs. A missionary heart recognizes his neighbor's needs. A missionary's heart is selfless and is willing to suffer. He's prepared to demonstrate the hope of truth. A missionary's heart is also a heart that's patient and gives comfort through the unity that is in Christ. A heart that is attentive to receive one another. A heart committed to evangelism and discipleship. A missionary's heart is probably a lot of things. It's probably a lot of things. But you know, whatever it is, a missionary heart is basically my heart. I had a man, I was trying to raise some money from him for the camp up in north of the north. He was a millionaire. And he said, "Well, if I give this money to help you buy the camp, what are you putting in?" You know how businessmen talk. So I said, well, you know, he caught me off guard, if you want to know the truth. And I thought, oh boy. Well, I've given my three children. He said, "That's enough. Okay, thank you." And I said, oh, okay. What do you give? You know, you just give yourself, right? You give all you've got. Why did you do that? Because he died for us. He gave everything for us. What do you decide to keep for yourself? You know? And how would you discuss it with the Lord? You know? Well, Lord, I know you didn't keep back anything, but I'd like to have a little something over here. You can't do it. So I thank you for putting up with me. I thank your pastor for putting up with his old friend, crazy as I am. I am a crazy sort of person, and I do bizarre things. And poor Brother Greg, he just smiles. But thanks for loving me. Thanks for praying for us. We appreciate you folks more than you know. If you have a question or two, I'll answer them. That's why I've come down. Just one or two. Shocked you out of it, did I? Okay. Any questions at all about something I've said that didn't make sense or that you'd like to know about? Well, they expect to go back in May. They won't be working. Well, we're not sure where they're going yet. They're looking at three different areas to start works in. Right now, I think they're talking to Chris Wilhelm, the fellow that was baptizing that guy. They're talking to him about he wants to branch a work, and they might help him do it because it's too far away from his own church to do it, but it's a good area. And he has three families coming from that area. And he knows that in time they won't keep driving all the way over there. So he's talked to him. And I think Dion's extremely interested in that. But as is usual with me, I'm the last one to hear. So you'll probably know before I do. But I usually think I know what's going on and find out I never do. But I think it's something like that. So maybe they'll go back in May or June. He is South African, so he can only stay here for 6 months. So I know he's going back in June, though. The country will throw him out. So, yeah. One more question? All right. I'm going to close this in prayer, shall I? Or, Pastor, how do you want to? Okay, Julia. Thank you.